Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is, great man, Blair Horner, the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG, a group and a person who is generally admired in Albany, more than generally admired, because while others have sold out, Blair Horner never has. Welcome, Blair.
Thanks for having me. I like the generally part. There may be some people down at the Capitol that view me with some concern.
Well, I would say... Okay, so are we ever going to have true ethics reform in New York State and in the legislature? Wait, don't tell me. The answer is no. Okay.
So well, you're talking to the guy who's an eternal optimist.
Yes, you are. But also knows how to find the bodies.
Well, I mean, in this case, I mean, the governor's been presented with a historic opportunity. Nothing like what's happened has happened. We've never had the convictions of the top legislative leaders all happening in one year. There's been a steady stream of convictions. There's been unbelievable revelations in the court cases around former Speaker Silver and former Senate Majority Leader Skelos. And so it's like the famous political philosopher, Professor Kingdom once said, you know, and for the political entrepreneur, the window of opportunity can open, and that's when you have to go through it. And so in this case, the governor has this historic opportunity to sort of jam through a package of reforms that could comprehensively change the way Albany operates. And he has proposed some of them in his state budget address. Now, the question of whether or not he'll succeed is the open question. You know, the legislature doesn't want to do a lot of the things that the governor is talking about, and we'll see if he uses his considerable political power to try to make those things happen.
Wait, just a second.
I know. All right. I could tell.
Wait just a second. This is a governor who has offered, you know, reforms before. They turn out never to have amounted to much. And so the real question to me always is, does he really want these reforms, or does he just want to say, you know, I'm putting them on the table knowing you guys will turn them down?
Well, I mean, that's certainly possible. And you're right.
The only difference between you and me is what I call probable, you call possible.
Well, you know, I always hate to predict in advance what's going to happen because you just never know. I mean, if the governor has advanced a package of reforms that include limits on outside income, that include a
not
campaign,
going full-time, right? You're not doubling their salary. You're just saying limits on outside
that's
income.
Right.
How much?
To sort of match what the Congress does. Right. To create some campaign finance reforms, including a system of public financing, to change the way that people register to vote in New York. It's a sort of a soup to nuts package. The danger for the governor is, and whatever his motivations are, is if he doesn't get anything done, is he going to then be perceived as weak? And he doesn't want to do that. The governor wants to reign supreme in Albany, and he knows he's been handed this historic opportunity. He has advanced proposals. I mean, last year's State of the State and budget package, he was like sort of, you know, he like tipped his hat at reform and really didn't say much. This time, he spent a lot of time on it. He has a lot of proposals on it. Time will tell. We only know a few months. We'll know what happens.
Now, there were some that he didn't mention in the State of the State, but he's putting on the table anyway. What's that?
Well, I mean, the governor, you know, in his State of the State address, he doesn't cover every single thing that he covers in his budget package.
Right.
And, you know, and this time around, he combined both his State of the State and budget into one speech.
Good idea. Even though the speech was way too long and too much baloney at the beginning.
And may have timed out to have been the same thing of giving two speeches at the same, you know. But, and so, you know, so the governor has a big book that goes with a lot of proposals that he advances, and then he talks about what he wants to highlight. You know, what matters is what he puts in the budget, and what matters is how hard he pushes. And we know what's in the budget. We don't know how hard he's going to push.
Yeah, and, you know, you say he doesn't want to be perceived as weak. I say that, you know, business as usual goes on in Albany, and he's part of it, and that's the way he deals with it. Look, you talk about historic opportunity. Shelley Silver loses out and gets convicted. Dean Skelos gets convicted. And the most amazing conversations between him and his kid and, you know, the kind of nonsense that you almost never get an opportunity to hear. So who do the members of the assembly elect to a reformer who will really clean things up? No. They elect Boss Hastie of the Bronx. Yeah, he is Boss Hastie of the Bronx. People say you shouldn't call him boss. He's now a speaker. No, he was the boss of the Bronx. And that's who they do. It was as plain as the nose on my face. I can tell you that. They knew what they were doing.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, when you if you're going to become speaker as a majority, you got to have the votes, right? And I've always been hearing that Hastie was the next guy in the on the on-deck circle if Silver ever left. And so it wasn't surprising that he had the votes. But it doesn't really matter, right, at the end of the day, what the motivations are or where they come from. What matters is what they do.
No, but what matters?
Will they feel pressure to do things this in election year or not? And the pressure is going to be should be brought to bear by the governor. The legislature will have to react to that.
And your group and other
groups
like you.
Well, I mean, we are supporting the governor's package. We think it can be stronger.
How? How stronger?
Well, I'll give you some examples. And the way the governor drafted his outside income restriction, for example, he says it's for the legislature. He says that in the definition of what's income is royalties from book sales. And he prohibits legislators from getting advance royalties on their books. Well, we think that should apply to the executive branch, too,
for example.
And so there's a way to improve it.
Well, how much did he get it in advance? Do we know how much he got for
it? It was around 700 grand.
$700,000 for a book that almost didn't sell. I mean, it was really anemic.
Yes, I mean, just so the listeners know, the governor has gotten a book deal in the past and has had advance royalties, which would have been prohibited under the language that he has or restricted.
If it had applied to the executive.
If it applied to the executive and if it was effective at the time. He did get, in fairness to the governor, he did get advance approval by the Joint Commission on Public Ethics.
Oh, I'm so surprised.
Executive director, not even the whole commission, just the executive director.
His former
staff person.
Come on.
And in fact, you know, one of the things that's sort of interesting about all this stuff with on the ethics front, the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, which is the state's number one ethics watchdog.
Jay Cope, called by many of us Jay Joke.
That's right.
Right.
It's been around for about 4 years. 1 year of that, they haven't had an executive director. Right now, they don't have an executive director. And so what's the best measure of people's commitment to ethics than whether or not they have a fully staffed agency, which they don't, and making it independent, which it's not? So another way that we think the governor could improve.
You mean independent of the governor?
Independent of everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason any of this stuff is happening is because the U.S. Attorney's Office, who's independent, has dropped the hammer on Albany. If it wasn't for him, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. The speaker would still be a guy named Sheldon Silver. The majority leader would be still a guy named Dean Skelos. The deputy majority leader would still be a guy named Tom Libous. I mean, that would all be the case. Albany's status quo would be firmly entrenched. We need independent ethics watchdog. The governor's proposal does not really address that issue at all, and we'll be trying to push him and the legislature to strengthen it.
Now, Blair Horner, you know, you're a very wise man, but here's what. If you see these three leaders that you just mentioned going to jail, on their way to jail, but if you look at the real problem is that the legislators who say, don't look at us, we're the good guys, they're the bad guys, but they vote for the next political leader who's going to protect them from having the hammer come down.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. attorney in his speech that he gave recently pointed that out. Yeah, he's pointed out that even good legislators who are honest and who have behaved honorably are part of the problem if they're enabling a corrupt system to be maintained.
They're not part of the problem. They are the damn problem. I mean, they are because they have to take responsibility.
Really, I think you should tell us what you really think, Alan.
Putting these guys in there. I don't know why the governor doesn't always like me. I don't figure that out, but it does happen. And
I agree. I mean, you know, you can't be an elected official in the New York State Legislature or a statewide elected official and do nothing in the face of this unprecedented scandal.
But they will do nothing. Okay, I'll put a dollar on the table right now and say, when the smoke clears.
I'm not going to take that. I'm not even going to take you up on that bet, because while I'm an optimist, I'm not a foolish gambler.
Well, you see, I have my dollar. I think it's an important dollar, and I say it's...
All right, how about this? I'll match it dollar for dollar, and whoever wins puts the $2 in the lockbox.
For WAMC, the
public
radio station.
There you go.
We are talking, even though this is heard on public radio stations all over the state, which also have their own very important fund drives.
All right, well, we'll lockbox for them all. We'll split it up however many ways you want. Our $2.
Okay, so Blair, I'm just fascinated because, to me, there are only two real ways to do it. One, the way that New York City did it. New York City said, all right, we're going to put term limits on you guys. Now, even that was corrupted, and a man I much admire, Michael Bloomberg, came along and essentially, is this libelous bought himself a third term. And he got them to go along with it in the city council because their terms got longer also.
That's right.
Okay, so one is term limits. I'm a huge believer in term limits, only when you really need, you have a desperate situation, and we do right now. And the other is initiative and referendum. I'm for it. I know it can go wrong. I know in California there's some examples of putting things on the ballot which weren't good, but that is democracy, and people have a choice of either voting for it or not voting for it instead of other people. They're never going to do anything like that.
Well, both of them are constitutional amendments do them.
And these guys are talking about they want a constitutional convention. Fine. You want a constitutional convention, put these in the Constitution.
No, I mean, those are certainly reasonable proposals. By the way, just to add, in New York City, in addition to term limits, they have a system of public financing, a very aggressive model for the country. And so you're combining it with term limits allows basically grassroots average people to run for city council because there are openings due to term limits, coupled with the fact they have access to resources to run the campaigns. And that's why you have had, I think it is a model for the state. But if you want to hinge reform, like right now, the moment in time in terms of the historical opportunity to the governor and the legislature is what they do this session. If they kick the can on a constitutional amendment, that's two successive legislatures. Before it goes to the vote for the public, the pressure may have dissipated this time next year.
Absolutely.
And so that's my only concern about a constitutional amendment strategy is the opportunities to change the law exist now, and we should seize the ones that we have offered to us, which is limits on outside income, closing the limited liability company loophole, and broadening the transparency in the state budget process so we can see what these legislative pots of money that are added to the budget, where they come from, who advocates for them, and where the money gets spent.
From the Department of Incredible Chutzpah comes the governor who says, let's close the so-called LLC loophole, which allows rich people to basically give anything they want to campaigns. But he takes it. He takes it to this minute. He says, okay, when they stop, I'll stop. Come on, that's childish behavior, isn't it?
Well, just so your listeners know, the limited liability company loophole is an interpretation of current law by the State Board of Elections. There's nothing in the law that says this. Which says that limited liability companies will be treated differently than other companies. They will be treated like humans, whereas businesses are treated, other corporations are dealt with differently. And because of that so-called loophole, huge campaign contributions can be made. In the Skelos case, Glenwood Management, which is run by a very prominent developer in New York City, estimated that they had contributed about $10 million in campaign contributions
to
the governor and the legislature.
And so they're equal opportunity they give to everybody.
Yes, because they want, well, they give to everybody who has power.
Sure.
Because they want tax breaks into the budget. They want changes in the rent control laws. So they're a prominent player. And this loophole allows them to pump huge amount of money into the political process that if it was a normal business, they could not. That's simply not fair.
Let's talk a little bit about Preparar, who you referenced before, the fighting U.S. attorney, who really has dropped the dime on the legislature.
The hammer.
The hammer, the dime, whatever you want, and is really a great hero. But he lets Governor Cuomo off the hook in his investigation of the disbanding of the Moreland Act Commission. But his words were fascinating to me. Nobody else seems to be as interested in his very specific words, which he said, there is not enough evidence to prosecute Cuomo. Not enough evidence? That's hardly a vote of endorsement.
Yeah, and it's only narrowly to the question of whether or not the closing down of the Moreland Commission, which the governor unceremoniously did during a budget deal, violated federal law. That doesn't mean that the administration's off the hook and the many other things that have been reported to be under investigation, although we don't know.
Well, let's talk about them. One of them is the so-called Buffalo Billions. Explain that.
Well, the governor, one of his premier plans is to try to revitalize Western New York. He's pledged $1 billion in basically New York State support to revitalize the city. And among the things that he's proposing are measures to increase sort of high technology industries, both in the area of healthcare and in the generation of solar panels through something called Solar City. So the state is pumping big bucks into Western New York, primarily in Buffalo. And so that's what the Buffalo Billion essentially is about.
And by the way, I just to intervene and say that while Cuomo did very badly upstate New York, he did well in Buffalo. He won in Buffalo.
Yeah, the second time around. The first time around, the only place he did badly was Western New York.
And there was a reason for that.
There was a candidate from Western New York. So the allegation that's been reported is that the U.S., and we don't know this for a fact, is that the U.S. attorney is looking into whether or not there were shenanigans tied to how the Buffalo Billion revenues are being awarded to companies. So, for example, there's been a report in the Buffalo News that a prominent construction company, that when the state was bidding out a contract, a prominent construction company was essentially able to get an award. And the way that the request for proposal was drafted was a way that only they could get it. And the administration says it was a mistake. In
we
the way
call
that
this
they
a no-bid contract, basically.
Essentially. They yes. said basically that you had to be in business doing a certain type of work for the last 50 years, 50.
Can you imagine?
And there's only one company that can do that in Western New York, magically. They said, well, no, we really didn't mean that. We
and
meant
did they
15.
Give any, and did they give any money? Though,
yes,
the
they were
group?
Big campaign contributors to the governor.
Oh, I'm so shocked. And shocked, I tell you, this gambling.
Gambling, Casablanca? So whether or not there's any, that, so there's some smoke there, right? But whether or not there's any fire, we don't know. What the U.S. Attorney's Office is going to do in that area could be nothing. We have no idea. But that's one big area. And the whole sort of strategy of using economic development dollars to drive economic development in the state appears to be certainly being looked at some level by the U.S. Attorney's Office as to whether or not something illegal occurred in that awarding of various contracts.
Now, Blair Horner, I think I cut you off before. I want to make sure, before the rest of the state knows in an upcoming news conference, what other things you have to suggest to the governor if he really wants ethics reform, he should do.
I mean, what we've argued to the governor is, I mentioned a little bit before, is there some what appears to be an oversight, let's say, in the drafting of how you do outside income, which we think it should be extended to the executive.
Okay, that's one we got. What else you got?
There's the measures to make the Joint Commission on Public Ethics independent of the governor. So, for example, there's 14 members of the commission now.
Yeah.
That's the biggest in the country. It's an even number. It's basically been gridlocked. One of the reasons why, for one of the last 4 years of its existence, they haven't had a director is because they can't get their act together to hire somebody.
Okay, so what do you want to do?
So we want that number to be cut in half. We want there to be a cooling off period so the executive director can't come from the executive or legislative branches like the last two.
I like it.
And we want a strict prohibition on elected officials being on the Joint Commission on
so
Public Ethics.
So who will
ethics.
Do the appointment?
Well, I mean, the appointing entities would still come from the governor, the attorney general, yeah. the comptroller, yeah, yeah. the legislative leaders, but none of the people on the commission could be elected officials. It's seen in sort of an unbelievable practice. The state allows elected officials to be on the Joint Commission, which oversees the lobbying industry, which is the greatest source of campaign contributions in the place. So the first head of the Joint Commission on Public Ethics was an electric district attorney who relies on campaign contributions to get elected to being DA. And yet they're regulating the lobbying industry. It's crazy, right? So there's certain things that can be done that can improve and make independent the Joint Commission. We're recommending that. The governor's proposed some ways to better make it easier for the public to follow dollars that go to companies that receive government contracts, but we think the governor's proposal should go on beyond that and have a much more delineated breakdown of the spending and these sort of lump sum appropriations. Our colleagues at Citizens Union have identified $2 to $3 billion in additional monies in the budget that are being allocated in a lump sum appropriation through some side deals, and it's not part of the budget. We think that there should be clarity in those areas.
Well, I'm glad to see Citizens Union is getting off its behind and being more ethical.
They're with us.
Being more ethical themselves, because the last time I think I remember, they spoke out in favor of this lukewarm ethics reform.
I think whether you've been fighting with the most and where we did was on the redistricting reform proposal, yeah. which they supported. And we did not.
Well, that's good for you, and I'm never disappointed in you, Blair. Okay.
So give it time.
Talk to us about education. The governor, we only have about 5 minutes left, but the governor, you know, has made some education proposals. He was in big trouble with the teachers. They really hated him to the last man, we think, or woman, and he's clearly wants to turn that around.
Well, we're not that involved in K-12
no.
stuff, so, I mean, it appears to be, the governor's added revenues to the budget, although some in the education community say that there isn't enough.
Well, that's their job.
And the governor appears to be sort of relaxing his reliance on the standardized tests in terms of teacher evaluation and evaluation.
That's because he got his fanny kicked on that.
Because the public does not want it. There's a lot of argument about whether or not these tests are valid measures of anything anyway, and so there should be look at that.
Now, what about SUNY CUNY?
Well, in terms of the state and city universities, the main thing that the governor did was to continue what's the so-called SUNY 2020 law, which allows for annual increases in student tuition of up to $300 a year, and continues to freeze the state contribution to higher education, which means a cut, right? Because
of course
inflation.
Yeah.
So he doesn't do anything about that stuff, and the and so it just means the students are going to be picking up more and more of the budget hole due to the sort of the clawback from the state in terms of its support for higher education.
It should be noted, of course, and I know you would want me to, that that your organization, NYPIRG, New York Public Interest Research Group, is funded in some large part by students.
That's right.
That makes
that, although that's not part of the budget proposal.
No,
yes,
I know, but I want, when you speak,
yes.
I think it's important that people...
Sure.
Know
our board of directors are college and university students elected from the schools that have NYPIRG chapters, and then the students allocate the money from their own student activity fees to NYPIRG if they want to have a chapter.
And you have brought great distinction to that organization, which didn't have it in the beginning, but your work as a lobbyist for the public good has been exemplary, and I think everybody knows it in Albany. Okay, so Zephyr Teach Out. I can't get enough of her because just of her name, every time I say her name, I like it.
And middle name, Rain.
Zephyr
Rain
Teach Out.
Yeah.
Rain Teach Out. Oh, good. Well, anyway, she's she's terrific. You may remember,
yeah.
Everybody may remember, she ran against Andrew, you know.
Did quite well.
Primary. Did extraordinarily well, especially yeah. upstate. Now she wants to be a congresswoman from the 19th district, because Chris Gibson is retiring from that job. What do you make of that?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's a district where Republicans have historically been able to maintain control, although there have been Democrats elected and there's been redistricting since then. My guess is that she would be a very attractive candidate, particularly to the party faithful. It's not clear who the Republican nominee is going to be. Right now, there's a former assemblyman and former gubernatorial candidate, John Faso, who seems to be raising a lot of money. It's not clear how that's all going to shake out. And I think to some extent, I'm not even sure what the Democrats are going to do. It's not clear how that's all going to play out yet. It's definitely a district that either party can take. The Republicans go into it with a slight advantage. And, you know, I think she has notoriety and would be able to motivate the Democratic base. Whether or not she can raise the money to go toe-to-toe with a formidable Republican candidate, and how the sort of the super PACs play out in that area, I think, is anyone's guess. When Gibson got in, he was elected in large measure by help from outside super PACs to knock out the incumbent at the time. So, you know, the congressional districts, particularly in upstate, are often very contested by both parties, and they tend to be the areas around urban areas. Be interesting to see how she does. I mean, the thing comes down to often, though, money. And it's not clear to me how that's all going to play out. I mean, Schuldel, the person who ran for the district last time and lost to Gibson, spent a lot of money, was unable to carry the district, primarily because he didn't really have much of a track record. I mean, Zephyr Teachout has a track record,
and
certainly as an academic.
And she's a classic outsider in the same way Trump and Bernie Sanders are both not the same old
no,
candidates.
That's absolutely right. I don't know how the politics of the district play out, but if she's up against someone like a Faso, for example, who's been involved in state government in various capacities for decades, I assume that she would try to position herself as that outside candidate.
Well, we are out of time. Our guest has been the wonderful Blair Horner, now the executive director of NYPIRG, New York Public Interest Research Group. Congratulations again, Blair, for your not only your wise promotion within that organization, but also for everything you've done, because you are the man up here. So thank you so much for doing it. And thanks so much to everybody for joining us today.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.